It's time for a solid hour of Tea Party Power. And now, here's Janine Garofalo's favorite teabagging redneck, Mark Gillar.
Good Saturday morning to you, and welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. I have two great guests today. Ben Shapiro, an editor with Breitbart.com and the author of Primetime Propaganda, is going to be here to talk to us about the latest videos released showing Barack Obama's relationship with Derrick Bell. And then we're going to talk to Tom Ballantyne, who is the author of a great new book called O'Reilly, O'Reilly, try saying that 10 times fast, a book about former conservative talk show host Bill O'Reilly. We'll be right back after this message.
Hi, I'm Brian Brody. Have you ever lost your power and simply wanted to flip a switch to turn your lights back on? If so, this message is the most important you will ever hear, because there's never been a better time to get off the grid and generate your own supply of electrical power. Solar power generators are now available. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity from the sun. It's like running an electric power plant in your own home. Hurricanes, ice storms, brownouts, blackouts, you'll never suffer through painful power outages again.
And if you'd like information regarding how you can get your own solar-powered generator or solar-powered oven or survival seed bank, go to teapartypowerhour.com and click on the appropriate ad.
Open up your heart and your mind to the words of Professor Derrick Bell.
That was, of course, Barack Obama encouraging his fellow Harvard Law students to open up their hearts and open up their minds to the words of Derrick Bell, a rather incredible piece of video released by Breitbart.com. And here with us today to discuss this in more detail is Ben Shapiro, who is an editor at Breitbart.com and is also the author of Primetime Propaganda, a book that suggests that Ernie and Bert on Sesame Street are gay. Ben, welcome to the show.
I certainly did not do that, Mark, but yes.
We made a lot of fun of that the last time you were on the show, so I couldn't resist. You wanted to cap Elmo, and oh, it was horrible.
Yeah, it was good times. Yeah, yeah. No, I put out the hit squad on the cast of Sesame Street, and you know, left was raking me over the coals for wanting to, you know, execute Elmo and Big Bird and Oscar and the rest of the gang. So
you're a horrible person, Ben. Thanks for being on the show.
That's a good welcome. You're a horrible person. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for being here. Obviously, there's been a lot of excitement created by these videos that you guys are in the process of releasing, showing Barack Obama's relationship with the very radical Harvard Law professor, Dr. Derrick Bell, one of the founding fathers of critical race theory. I think everybody saw your cohort, Joel Pollack, debating Soledad O'Brien, and she apparently had a completely different interpretation of what critical race theory is. But why don't we talk about exactly the concept of critical race theory and why it's so important that Barack Obama would have been so close to someone who espoused that theory?
Okay, so basically critical race theory, if you want to summarize it in a nutshell, you have to go back to critical theory. Critical theory was a Marxist construct from the 1920s. They're essentially a group of Marxists living in Europe in the 1920s, and they decided that Marxism had failed. Marxism, in its technical form, Marxism suggests that capitalism carries the seeds of its own destruction, and at a certain point, capitalism will collapse in on itself. Well, when that didn't happen, the Marxists had a problem. You know, how do we create this Marxist world if capitalism isn't just going to destroy itself? And what they came up with was something called critical theory, which is we are going to take over all the institutions of society, and we are going to criticize them incessantly. So all the institutions of society, legal, cultural, you know, linguistic, all of them are going to be are outgrowths of a capitalist mindset, and so we have to tear them down all the way down and then rebuild from the ground up. So that's what critical theory was about. It was about criticizing, which is why it's called critical theory. Now, one of the kind of adjuncts to that was come up with by Derrick Bell and a couple of folks like him in the 1960s, and it was called critical race theory. Now, critical race theory held was something like critical theory. It said that the societal system, the legal system, the linguistic system, everything was essentially based in race and in white supremacy. And therefore, in order to get rid of racialism, in order to get rid of white supremacy, he had to tear down the system as a whole and then rebuild ground up. So every major law was, in Derrick Bell's view, an expression of white sovereignty. Right? So even law, even things like Brown versus Board of Education, a judicial decision ending segregation, even that, according to Derrick Bell, was an outgrowth of white supremacy, and the only reason that it was that it ever happened is because white people wanted it. So it wasn't that it was there to help blacks; it was mainly there to help whites, and you know, helping blacks just helped whites. So this is what critical race theory is, and Derrick Bell was the father of it.
Now, apart from Barack Obama introducing him that day, what evidence is there that Barack Obama was close to Derrick Bell and that he agreed with his thinking?
Well, not only was he there that day introducing him, we now have tape or access to tape of him talking about Derrick Bell's writings from that same speech. But he was assigning Derrick Bell's writings in his class when he was a lecturer at University of Chicago. He was actually assigning some of the more extreme portions of Derrick Bell's stuff. Derrick Bell was very close associates with Jeremiah Wright. He spoke at Jeremiah Wright's church. He hung out with all the same people that Obama hung out with. And he was writing op-eds up till the time of his death in favor of both Barack Obama and in favor of Jeremiah Wright. So these two were closely associated for a long time. This was not just some sort of passing fancy.
Well, one of the things that Joel Pollack said when he was in that debate with Soledad O'Brien was that Barack Obama not only assigned some of his works, but some of his more inflammatory works to his legal students. So if someone wanted to become more familiar with the works of Derrick Bell, then what would you recommend they read? Which of his works do you think do a good job of defining what this guy was all about?
You know, he wrote a couple of books, a lot of them are fictional in nature and actually kind of fun to read. There's one he wrote, I think it's called Afro-Atlantic Literature. There's several of his books. I can't remember the titles offhand, but you can go on Amazon, and all of them are, I mean, he's actually not a bad writer. He's kind of an interesting writer. If you can get through some of the turgid prose and get to his fiction pieces are really where he starts to have fun. He said once in an interview that he believed that he was writing fictional pieces in order to really say what he felt. He felt he couldn't do it properly in nonfiction because he would get rigged over the coals. So he was writing fiction pieces. You know, there was one in particular that he really liked, which is called The Space Traders, which posited that if aliens came to Earth and offered to relieve the United States of its national debt and offered to clean up its pollution in exchange for the United States selling all of its black people to the aliens, white Americans would go for that deal. That was one of his fictional pieces, but that was not his only one. There are others that were similarly provocative. So, you know, he wrote a lot of stuff. All of it was basically of the same tone and tenor. I don't think that I'm not sure that there's, you know, any one Derrick Bell book that's significantly better than another, but, you know, it is worthwhile reading it just so that you understand the theory.
Well, by the way, if there are any aliens listening right now from outer space, I certainly would never do that to black people, but I am willing to trade all the liberals on the planet in exchange for those things that Ben mentioned. So give me a call. We'll talk. Now, some people are saying that, well, not some people, Soledad O'Brien was suggesting this wasn't the bombshell she thought it was going to be. So I'm going to ask you in a slightly different way, Ben. Whenever we already know that Barack Obama had an association with the very radical Bill Ayers and Bernardine Dorn, that he had this relationship with Jeremiah Wright, he had this relationship with Tony Rezko, how is adding one more radical to the list of radicals Obama associated with really a bombshell?
Well, Obama's you know, statements have always suggested that, you know, he just happened to be in the room when Jeremiah Wright was speaking, you know, that he just happened to be on a board with Bill Ayers. But what this video really shows is Obama saying, you know, open your hearts, open your minds to the words of Professor Derrick Bell. He's embracing the philosophy of Bell. And this is the first time that we have Obama on tape explicitly embracing the philosophy of one of these folks. And that's why it makes it so crucial. There's also something else here, which is that when you look at Jeremiah Wright, people look at Jeremiah Wright and they look at Obama and they said, nah, you know, no way, because Jeremiah Wright is so obviously a nutcase, you know, the chicken's coming home to roost and all this crap, and then they look at Obama, who's obviously not a nutcase. I mean, Obama's obviously a very, very intelligent fellow, and so they look at them, and it just doesn't click. Derrick Bell is a very, very smart guy, and the stuff that he writes is pretty well written, and, you know, when you look at Derrick Bell and you watch him speak, you can see Obama there, right? I mean, there you can see that this is an academic of the sort that, you know, Obama considers himself to be, espousing the same sort of ideas as Jeremiah Wright, just in nicer language, and Obama, you know, embracing that. And so I think that it's important, number one, for people to recognize that extreme ideas can be well articulated by people like both Derek Bell and Barack Obama. And number two, this is the one instance that we have so far of President Obama saying that he embraces the philosophy of somebody as opposed to just, you know, having sat in the pews.
Gotcha. Well, when I watched Breitbart release those O'Keefe Acorn tapes one at a time, you know, you got the idea that he was suckering the left in. He released one tape, and then the entire left-wing media came out and said, oh, my goodness, they must have gone to 50 Acorn offices. Only one office was willing to help the pimp and the prostitute. This doesn't mean anything. Look at that. In fact, that's a testimony to the integrity of Acorn that only one office was willing to participate in this nonsense. And then he released another and another, and they just got worse and worse. And you kind of got the impression that Breitbart was a cat toying with its prey before he consumed it. I'm getting that same impression now, Ben. I'm getting the feeling that maybe you guys have some videos with much, much worse stuff on it. You're getting the mainstream media to say Barack Obama does not embrace Marxism. He is not a radical. He did not associate with radicals. And then these other tapes are going to come out, and once you've got all these people on record, you're going to make them look stupid.
I can't say anything about that. All I can say is that your exposition of what Andrew did during Acorn is 100% correct, because I was talking to Andrew during it, and Andrew, you know, he told me exactly what he was doing. He spelled it out exactly the same way that you just did. I'm not going to say what we do or do not have. All I can say is that we do have a lot of material on President Obama, and we will be, you know, vetting this president all the way up to the election.
Well, let me also suggest that if you have a tape, and this is just conjecture on my part, okay, I'm just throwing this out there. If you have a tape where Barack Obama is sitting in a circle with Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, and they're smoking pot and singing Kumbaya with all their Marxist friends and talking about how they're going to bring down capitalism, I would save that for last.
we won't release the one that we have of Obama, smoking dope with Karl Marx. We won't release that one until later. I mean, come on. The purpose is to get as much information as possible in front of the American public. So we're not here to sandbag anybody. All we're here to do is make clear to the American public exactly who it is they elected, because we didn't pay any attention the first time.
Okay, let me play another clip from that Soledad O'Brien interview. This is actually Jay Thomas piping in. It wouldn't be an interview by liberals if the race card wasn't played. So let's give a look.
Oh, it's ridiculous, yeah.
Here we go.
Can I say something as a white person? What are you frightened of?
Are you
frightened that some black people are going to do something to you? You have a group of individuals. If you and I were black, we would be madder in hell. But we're not. And so we are white people. There are more white people than black people. And so there's a struggle that's been going on. And so in a struggle, you talk about a lot of things. There's anger. There's resentment. And so what are you frightened of? What do you think Barack Obama's going to do? Is there a secret black movement that's going to start killing white people? What are you talking about?
Okay. One quick question before you respond to that. As someone who's undoubtedly been a guest on CNN before, do they serve alcohol in the green room?
I mean, seriously, Jay Thomas has the IQ of a rock. I mean, the guy, maybe if he's lucky, he has the IQ of an inanimate object. I mean, this is when he's going after Joel for being a racist, for bringing this up, it's absolutely absurd. I mean, on its face, it's absurd for a variety of reasons, including the fact that Joel is married to a black woman. I mean, it's such crap. And beyond that, there's nothing there to suggest any sort of racism. I mean, the fact is that what Joel did and what we've been doing is exposing that, you know, President Obama's ideology. And so Jay Thomas is going where liberals always want to go, which is, if you don't like militant theology, if you don't like, you know, racially militant nonsense, then it must be that you're a giant racist, which is a bunch of crap. The only people who are racist in this equation are people like Derek Bell, who are suggesting that the American system is so deeply rooted in racism that we have to tear it down and start brand new. That's a bunch of nonsense, too. So, you know, it's insulting and it's ridiculous. And no wonder, you know, Soledad got raked over the coals. First of all, she had no clue what she was talking about. She clearly didn't know what critical race theory was. Joel asked her, and she proceeded to spout the definition from Wikipedia. I mean, it was insane. And then she goes to this schmuck, you know, JJ, whatever his name is some irrelevant Sirius XM satellite host that nobody cares about, except when he's on TV. And he proceeds to call Joel a racist, which is just, it's insulting, it's ridiculous, But it shows how much the media is in the tank for Obama. The first place they go when there's any sort of assault on Obama is you hate black people. It's so ridiculous and insulting, and it's not even worth it. It really is not even worthy of a response. But bottom line is this. The only people in this equation who are thinking in terms of race are liberals who are playing the race card in order to absolve President Obama of his radicalism.
One of the things that Soledad brought up is that this was a Harvard law student introducing a Harvard law professor. Now,
she's such an idiot. I went to Harvard Law. Joel went to Harvard Law. You know, the idea that you know, you randomly introduce students. You randomly introduce professors is just nonsense. It's nonsense. I mean, first of all, the relationship extended long beyond that. And second of all, it's that's not the way that it works. I mean, even if you're a student, anybody who went to college knows this. Would you randomly be introducing a professor you didn't know at a major rally? I mean, nobody does that. Nobody does that. So, like, this idea that Obama just, you know, he woke up one morning and decided, hey, you know what, I'm going to speak at the Derek Bell rally. He walked up to Derek Bell and was like, you know what, I'm going to introduce you. That's not how it works. And everybody knows it's not how it works. And by the way, I mean, you see that all of Obama's close associates are hanging around Derek Bell. In that video, one of the things that we haven't really pointed out till now, one of the people, the woman standing next to Derek Bell in that video and applauding and looking up at him, you know, with this kind of, these kind of adoring eyes because she admires him so much is Cassandra Butts, who's a very, very close associate of President Obama's and who now works in the administration. So it's just... The left can try and get out of this however they want. The facts are the facts. President Obama believes in critical race theory. He associated with people who believed in critical race theory. And we're not going after him based on race. We're going after him because he's the president of the United States and he has not been vetted. And we're going after the media at the same time because they want to cover for him.
And that's been the tradition since he began running for office, regardless of what the issue is. I mean, issues that if it were Sarah Palin or Michelle Bachmann or Christine O'Donnell, they would have been all over him. They've completely ignored. I think a great example of that is they went after Todd Palin because he got a DUI when he was 23. Well, Barack Obama Sr. got in 3 automobile accidents. He was drunk in every single one of them. In one of them, he killed another person in the other car. In another, he had to have his legs amputated because of the extensive damage. And in a third, he actually killed himself. So Barack Obama Sr. in 3 drunk driving accidents in which he was the actual drunk driving, and the media swept that under the rug. But Todd Palin, a DUI with no real consequences when he was 23, now that's news. And so it's
it's unfortunate, but that's the way the media is covering it. And so this comes back to, you know, Andrew's main point, which is that we need an army of citizen journalists. The media is not going to do its job. The media is not going to do its job. The media is simply going to continue its pattern of protecting President Obama. And so it's up to all of us to do the job that the media won't, which means that we are the ones who have to go out and do the research. If you have a tip, send it to us. If you have any information or any ideas, send it to us. We will track them down. It is our goal to vet not only President Obama but all of our politicians, because an informed citizenry is a safe citizenry. An uninformed, ignorant citizenry is a citizenry that can be put under the thumb of just about anybody.
Well, I know you can't reveal what's coming next, but I don't want to sound like Jack Nicholson, saying, you know, please tell me you have more. But I would hope these are going to become more and more intense, or perhaps more and more revealing of Obama's true character as time marches on.
Well, you know, like I said, all we can tell you right now is that we will continue to vet the president, and that we do have more material in the can.
Over what period of time do you think you'll be releasing this material?
All the way up to the election.
All the way up to the election. Now, you said, we talked
about... Hopefully, we won't have to be on the election.
Hopefully. I'm going to put you in a tough situation because it's a subject that nobody wants to talk about, but you said if you have tips, contact us. Why isn't the mainstream media covering the eligibility issue? I mean, we have a birth certificate that looks like it was cut and pasted together by a third grader with Elmer's glue. We've got a Social Security card that won't pass E-Verify. We have a Selective Service card where the PICA stamp is clearly faked. Hundreds and hundreds of cards have been looked at, Ben, and the 1 in 9 in the year 1980 is only missing from one person's card. That's Barack Hussein Obama's. If you look at the birth certificate, one of the first things you look for in a forgery is a misspelled word. In the registrar's stamp, we have the word the spelled T-X-E. No other birth certificates coming out of Hawaii have that misspelling. But I could give you about 25 things. You're an intelligent guy. I know you understand computers. I could send you tapes that I've made of why this thing is fake. but yet the mainstream media is yawning at this, and so are a lot of conservative media outlets. Why?
Well, you know, I'm one of the people who yawns at it because I think that the amount of conspiratorial intent that would have to go into falsifying this stuff from 40 years ago is too heavy. There's no, you know, to my knowledge, there's no evidence to suggest this, I just don't believe it. So, you know, I know there are people who are very concerned with this. I think it's a waste of resources because, number one, I don't think it's true. Number two, even if it were true, it would have no impact on the political debate because nobody's going to do anything about it. So it's a waste of resources and it's a waste of time, and it makes people look like kooks, even if they aren't. So I would recommend that, you know, I would really recommend that people drop this topic and focus on who this president is as opposed to, you know, an issue that is not going to be an issue in this election cycle, and something I believe to be baseless anyway.
Okay, well, let me go back to the Clinton era. We had an extensive amount of time to obsess over whether Bill Clinton received oral sex from Monica Lewinsky in the Oval Office. We've got time to obsess over American Idol and Dancing with the Stars and the Casey Anthony case. Why can't one more issue be brought on the table?
And look, any issue can be brought on the table. It's America. It's First Amendment stuff. I mean, if people want to expend time and energy doing this, that's fine. All I'm saying is this. Most people, including me, don't believe it. Number two, it's not a story that's going to go anywhere because people are not interested in it. And number three, you know, there's only a certain – yes, there's an amount of time in the day for everything. If you want to spend your time on that and if other people want to spend their time on that, that's their issue. And again, it's America. You can do whatever you want. All I'm recommending is that if you're really concerned with President Obama getting, you know, being ousted from the Oval Office, then we ought to focus on his record. We ought to focus on who he is. We ought to focus on what he's done. Focus on all the issues that Americans really care about as opposed to this one.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Have you actually done any investigating yourself, or are you just going with the overall concept that it's so far-fetched that it can't be true?
Yeah, I mean, look, as a journalist, I've looked at the arguments on both sides. I don't think it's true. There are people who disagree. That's their prerogative. That's my own opinion. It's not something I'm going to spend my time on. I don't recommend that other people spend a ton of time on it because I just don't think that it's going anywhere. And again, I keep saying this over and over because I know Media Matter is going to listen to this. I don't think it's true. I think it's a complete waste of time, and I think that people should move beyond it.
How big a crime, because we are talking about forgery and treason here, how big a crime can a president commit and get away with it simply because people don't think it's an issue?
If you're asking as a general matter, I mean,
I am.
Presidents can get away with an awful lot if people don't think it's an issue.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll leave it at that. I mean, that's just the fact.
I'm going to be honest. I'm disappointed in your answer on that because I think that you said you've looked into it and you don't think it's true. I don't know what you've looked at, but I can tell you that I can point about 23 things that are wrong with this birth certificate that point to the fact that it had to be constructed on a computer. But forget about the birth certificate. If you're afraid of being called a birther, and a lot of people are, the Selective Service card, if you don't register for Selective Service, you're not eligible for any executive position in the government. You're absolutely ineligible. So forget about the birth certificate. Forget about where he was born. The Selective Service card is absolutely 100% faked, and that has been demonstrated very well in a video that Joe Arpaio showed at his press conference. This has nothing to do with where he was born. It has nothing to do with constitutional eligibility as far as the natural-born citizen thing. This is Obama faking a Selective Service card because he realized if he hadn't faked it, he wouldn't be eligible for president. It has nothing to do with where he was born. Would Breitbart.com be interested in looking at that?
I can't speak for Breitbart.com. I know that's not something that I'm particularly interested in looking at the moment. But you know, if people are going to present evidence, then that's the, you know, again, I'm not the, I'm, I don't want to be cor- I don't want to speak for the company because I'm not the corporate spokesperson for Breitbart.
I understand. I didn't mean to put you on the spot, and I didn't mean to cover this issue that long, but I did want to get your opinion on it. I'm going to be honest.
I appreciate that you want my opinion on it. And again, everybody's free to spend their time investigating what they want. And if this is the way you want to vet the president, feel free to vet the president that way. And if you feel like you can prove the case, go for it. All I'm saying is that, you know, from my own personal perspective, this is not what I'm choosing to spend my time on. I don't think it's an issue. I don't think many people within Breitbart think it's an issue. And so, you know, we would prefer to spend our time and our efforts elsewhere.
Based on your research, how many people think that him palling around with Derek Bell is an issue?
I think that clearly the media does, right? I mean, it's turned into a major media upset, clearly. I mean, it's been covered on all the major networks. I think that, if we can judge from both our traffic and our emails, then we can say that a lot of people think it's an issue. But again, look, I'm not saying then nobody should investigate this stuff. If you won't investigate this stuff, that's your prerogative. I'm not discouraging anybody. Well, that's not true. I am discouraging people from spending time on this because I don't want to lie. I mean, I am discouraging people because I think that, number one, I don't think it's an issue. Number two, it's an issue on which people are being marginalized very easily and very quickly at this point. Mm-hmm. And if you want to be and if we really want to focus on issues that are going to, you know, get Obama, you know, that are going to reveal who Barack Obama is, then there are issues I think that are much better to play on. But, you know, this is in my opinion, this is not one of them.
Okay.
And again, people can feel free to disagree. This is just my opinion.
I do disagree, but again, it's kind of interesting because I think a lot of people, you talked about being marginalized. I mean, that's straight out of the Saul Alinsky handbook. But the bottom line is this Selective Service Card issue, which was kind of introduced in the first big way at the Sheriff Arpaio teleconference, I mean, it was clearly demonstrated how it was faked, why it has to be faked. I mean, we're talking about 500 Selective Service Cards being reviewed. The only one that didn't have the date right, like Barack Obama's, was Barack Obama's. This thing is obviously faked. You can also tell by looking at there's an issue with the DLN numbers, the DLN number in the upper right-hand portion of it. It's very easy to prove this thing is fake. And if it's fake, he's ineligible to be president, not because he wasn't born in Hawaii, not because, you know, his mom popped on a plane and for some unknown reason had a baby in Kenya when she had superior medical facilities available in the United States, but because he faked a card. I don't get why that's not a tip you wouldn't jump all over.
Well, I mean, look, you know, would we jump? Would we assign somebody to it? Maybe. It's not. I'm not the one who makes that call. But it's.
Okay.
But like I said, we're not the only news organization in the world. All we are is. Look, we want. Like I said, we want to vet the president. And if you want to spend your time doing that, that's fine. We have.
No. This is a form of vetting the president, though. If there is a.
I understand. And we encourage everybody to vet the president in their own way. We're not the only outlet for vetting the president, obviously. Right. And if people disagree with me on this, then, you know, go for it. I'm not, you know, how people vet the president is their business. I'm not here to tell people how they should or should not vet the president. So I'll retract that. You know, if you want to make this an issue, then go ahead and make it an issue.
So you're saying I'll have to do it without your help, though?
Yeah, on this issue, you'll have to deal without my help.
Even the Selective Service Card? That has nothing to do
even
with
it? Even the Selective Service Card at this point.
My goodness, this is shocking. I mean, really, you said if people have a tip to send it to you, I think that's a tip and you don't want it. I don't get it.
I'll be honest. There are people inside our organization who look at all the tips. And when we saw this, and you're not the first person to bring up this tip. When people bring up tips, we tend to check them out. What our internal researchers have told us is this is not a legitimate thing. So, you know, I'm basing that on us vetting everything that comes through the door, and that is something that we do.
Okay,
so,
vet everything that comes through the door. I'm going to send you a video that I actually produced for Sheriff Arpaio, strictly on the Selective Service Card. If you feel the birther thing is a waste of your time, I'll respect that. But I'm going to send this to you. I'm going to ask you to pass it on to whoever looks at this stuff and see if it can't be useful to you, because I think that's very important to you. Fair enough. All right. Now, I want to encourage everybody to go out and get your book, Primetime Propaganda. I have read the whole thing. It's a great book. And by the way, I also want to congratulate you on your piece regarding Tom Hanks today, because I think you did an excellent job of reviewing that. So I would encourage
you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, that was very well done. And I would encourage people to go by Breitbart.com and take a look at that. Ben, thanks for being on the show.
Be well.
You too. And we'll be right back with Tom Ballantyne, the author of O'Reilly O'Reilly, right after this message.
Hi, I'm Brian Brody. Have you ever lost your power and simply wanted to flip a switch to turn your lights back on? If so, this message is the most important you will ever hear, because there's never been a better time to get off the grid and generate your own supply of electrical power. Solar power generators are now available. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity from the sun. It's like running an electric power plant in your own home. Hurricanes, ice storms, brownouts, blackouts, you'll never suffer through painful power outages again.
And if you'd like information regarding how you can get your own solar-powered generator or solar-powered oven or survival seed bank, go to teapartypowerhour.com and click on the appropriate ad. My next guest is Tom Ballantyne. He is the author of O'Reilly O'Reilly. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be with you.
talk to me a little bit about yourself first, Tom, because this is your first visit to the show. Tell my listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, you know, being a guy that likes conflict, I'll start by saying I'm a University of Texas alum. I know where you're broadcasting from, and having said that, I lived in Montgomery there on Lake Conroe for a few years, some years back, and grew up in Houston, so I've always been an Aggie fan, and I actually graduated from the University of Houston, but I started out playing basketball. I was a walk-on at UT, and I remember, in fact, playing in G. Raleigh White Auditorium, and I was the only time on a basketball court that I was ever in fear of my life, before my life.
Well, let's talk about the title of your book, O'Reilly O'Reilly. Tell my listeners when you had your O'Reilly O'Reilly moment.
Well, it's fairly easy to remember. It actually was February the 14th of last year, and I can't exactly excuse myself, at least explain myself to my wife or to other women that might be listening, but here it was Valentine's Day, and we'll just say that I was waiting for my wife to get ready before we went out. I don't really remember, but anyway, I was watching O'Reilly. And he had decided to talk about the president's religion and his birth certificate. And he said, and this is a pretty direct quote, may not be word for word, but he said that neither of those things, whether he were a Muslim, I'm sure he used the term was a Muslim, whether he was a Muslim or whether he was whether he was born in Hawaii or the United States, it would have no bearing on any national policy. And you've probably seen the cartoon of the old country boy sitting there and his wife Peter with his shotgun and the TV, you know, having been decimated. Well, fortunately for my big screen TV, I didn't have a shotgun, but I immediately cried out or yelled out, "Are you?" Really, is what I responded when he said that neither of those two issues would have any bearing on any national policy. And I'm thinking, okay, we're at war with radical Islam. But, and by the way, there is no religious test. You know, I wasn't born yesterday. You and I and all of your listeners who are highly informed because they're conservatives know that there is no religious test, but it's fairly unlikely that a Muslim would be elected president of the United States at this juncture. But here's Bill O'Reilly, you know, in the quote-unquote no-spin zone, saying that it wouldn't have any bearing on national policy. So I yelled out, "Oh, really?" So the next day I was telling a friend of mine about this, and it was kind of funny because almost simultaneously we both mouthed the words, "Oh, really, O'Reilly?" And I had released a book 2 years earlier, and you know, been busy marketing that book and, you know, posting blog on my blog and that sort of thing, but had not taken up a pen to write another book. And so right there on the spot, I said, "You know what? Oh, really, O'Reilly? That would be a good title, and I'm gonna write a book about this." So that's how it started.
It's not just O'Reilly, though. I mean, we have pretty much been abandoned by Fox News in general. Sean Hannity won't take up this issue. Mark Levin, who whines about the Constitution all the time, doesn't seem to give a flip whether Obama is constitutionally eligible. And, you know, just Glenn Beck the other day was making fun of Joe Arpaio for even looking into this. So a lot of our conservative mouthpieces have abandoned us, and one of the things that you hear on the street is that they're being threatened. You hear rumors of the White House threatening to use the full force of the FCC, or in the case of Fox News, the FTC, to come after them if they don't get in line. I mean, my understanding is Fox News was told in no uncertain terms, you do not give this issue coverage. And at the same time, I think in the same meeting, they were also told, and we're sick of Barack Obama being called Barry Satoru. From now on, you call him President Obama. And it looks like Fox has complied.
Well, you know, it was, we weren't allowed to call him. Of course, you and I do. We actually believe in this unique or quaint concept called the First Amendment. So we call him what we will. But we weren't initially allowed to call him Barack Hussein Obama. you know, wherever that name came from. It obviously didn't sit well with the American public, but in any case, yeah, Fox News, and by the way, Mark, I know you haven't had time to read the book. It's, as you know, it's fairly lengthy, but I go into detail about the threats. Doug Hagman, which with the Canada Free Press, he and Judy McCloy, the editor of the Canada Free Press, broke that story. And I've always assumed that Sean Hannity, there was a prominent national radio host, talk show host, that had sent a letter to Mark, or to Douglas Hagman. He's been a private investigator for many 20-something years, and I'm not sure how he knew this particular talk show host, but the host told him that his network had been threatened with not only their jobs, but further, you know, harm. And he didn't describe it, but one can imagine to family or to himself personally. And so he did comply. He was, by the way, I'm sure you again know this, but Sean Hannity was the first scheduled interview with Jerome Corsi.
Right.
Jerry has endorsed this book as well as Jack Cashfield, who's another prominent national writer. He wrote the book Deconstructing Obama.
I was actually reading that book last night. I had Jack on the show when that book launched, and I was researching something. I remember Jack had covered it in the book, so I literally had that book in my hands last night.
Great book. Jack's a great guy. He and I spoke to the Tea Party, the Red Mountain Tea Party in Mesa a couple of months ago, and he's just one fine individual and very bright. He essentially proves that Bill Ayers wrote Dreams from My Father. There's not any question whatsoever about that.
I don't know how anyone can read Jack's book and not come to that conclusion.
Well, one of the things, Mark, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and to your audience, one of the things that I talk about at some length in the book, and it's become a theme with me, I go around, I live in Phoenix, and I'm actually in Queen Creek, which is east, we call it the East Valley, but part of the greater Phoenix area, and I've spoken to dozens of Tea Party groups all over the area and beyond, and I've developed sort of a central theme, which is the absurdity. I somewhat rail on this, the absurdity of referring to the what I call the OEM, the obsolete, elitist, or establishment media, the absurdity of referring to that state-controlled media, as Rush puts it, as the mainstream. And with the exception of Rush, almost everybody, and he even does it from time to time, almost across the board, every conservative in the country refers to that absolute, you know, state-controlled media as mainstream. And my first book was called The Secret of Life, and it was about the power of thought. And I'm very specific about the fact that words have meaning, and our minds control our actions. And when our subconscious mind accepts that the media, the old media, I call it endangered, but it's well beyond endangered, you know, statistically speaking, in terms of readership and viewership. Mm-hmm. But when we ascribe to that leftist entity, that elitist, you know, group of entities, the term mainstream, we are absolutely shooting ourselves not in the foot but in the head. And I'll let you continue here, but I can assure you that John Boehner and pretty much every Republican, not only in the national legislature, but in the state of Arizona, we have a Republican-dominated legislature. They all believe and act like that old, obsolete, or endangered media is the voice of America, and they absolutely are not. They're the very opposite of what most Americans believe.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think we're seeing them essentially slide down a slippery slope into oblivion. They're not going to matter much in the future, as people have learned that they are extremely biased and are turning to citizen journalists, you know, for their news. It's kind of embarrassing that these outlets that, again, are referred to incorrectly as the mainstream media, have such resources available to them, but because of their undeniable liberal bias, people would rather go on the internet and read their favorite blogger to get their news because they know that it's coming from a source that they trust. And by the way, I noticed you said shoot in the head. Be really careful with that, Tom, because every time someone gets shot in the next 2 weeks, you're going to be blamed for it.
That's true. You know, we're all familiar. I just read the story online, WND reported. And by the way, I have to give a plug to WND. I used to believe, and most of us did, that Fox News was somewhat our salvation, but I almost never watch them now. I'll occasionally watch Hannity. I just won't watch O'Reilly. I just cannot take the PC mindlessness, and, you know, he calls himself the no spin zone while he sits there and spins endlessly. But anyway, that organization has been replaced, in my humble opinion, by WND, WorldNet Daily, under the leadership of Joseph Farah. Jerry Corsi, Dr. Jerome Corsi, is, in fact, you know, one of their staff writers, as is Jack Cashill and any number of other prominent Thomas Sowell, and any number of Walter Williams, prominent national conservatives that you might mention. In any case, did you by any chance read my open letter to Glenn Beck which was posted on the Western Center for Journalism this week?
I did not get a chance to look at that. Why don't you fill me and my listeners in right now?
Well, in essence, I was calling him out, which, by the way, that's the entire purpose of O'Reilly. And as you mentioned, it goes well beyond just O'Reilly. I name names. Mark Levin's in there. Letcher Hart, Laura Ingraham. Of course, Laura is, you know, sort of Bill O'Reilly's trainee, if you will. So, you know, she's a bit like Sarah Palin having to speak out against John McCain. I think she should, but she's not going to. Ann Coulter has no such excuse, however. She has been, trying to think of what the right word is, but caustic in her attacks on the mindless conservatives. She doesn't refer to us as conservatives, and she probably is too smart to say call us Tea Partiers, which we are, because she doesn't want to alienate her entire base. But she, again, Mark Levin, Fred Barnes, even Michelle Malkin, these are, you know, these are supposed female, if you will, in terms of culture, and Malkin, pit bulls of our movement. They have mercilessly mocked anyone who dares raise what is not only a hugely important issue, you know, the guy that's occupying the most powerful position in the world, and, you know, systematically setting about to destroy our economy and our Constitution and our personal liberties. Not only do they mock the idea that that's important, but they mock anyone who dares to raise the issue. And it's such a clear issue. Joe Arpaio, he proved beyond any reasonable doubt, there's no reasonable doubt, that the birth certificate is a fraud. And the reason it's a fraud is because there is no original birth certificate, at least not a Hawaiian birth certificate, and probably not a U.S. birth certificate. But he proved that without any doubt. And then, of course, he talks about the Selective Service Registration, which is also clearly a fraud. And he didn't even get into the Social Security number. Now, think about that. We have a president of the United States who's using a fraudulent birth certificate, a fraudulent Selective Service registration, because he never registered for the draft. That was done in 2008.
Right.
And he's using a fraudulent Social Security number. Now, even Jimmy Carter didn't do any of those things.
Well, what I can tell you is that people like Glenn Beck, for example, and supposedly his sidekick there, Stu, spent 3 years... Stu spent 3 years researching this and said there's nothing to it, and I can only conclude that Stu is short for stupid, because one doesn't have to look at the birth certificate very long before you start finding anomalies that can't be explained. Now, I would challenge Stu to a debate as the person who did the voiceover work and produced those videos for the Arpaio team that they showed to the press that day.
Yeah, fantastic job, by the way.
Thank you. But I don't think Stu would have the cojones to essentially take me on a debate, because I don't think he knows the first thing about it. You know, there's a guy in Phoenix named Dr. Data who came out and supported the fact that there was no problem with the birth certificate because he got layers. Well, if you watch the videos, we said in video number 4 that the control document that we did had 45 layers. The problem isn't that the document has layers, it's that it has too few. And the way the layers are break down, they're indicative of layers being created by hand in an Adobe software product, as opposed to just being some sort of random layering process that is the result of optimization. And, you know, I tried to explain that to Dr. Data, and there's so many things that we didn't get into in that press conference. I've been studying this issue since the day the birth certificate came out. My thought was that, you know, we had to hold back because the media isn't that bright, and we couldn't overwhelm them with computer facts because they frankly wouldn't get it. But, you know, what I can tell you is that you've got people out there like Glenn Beck, you've got people out there like Sean Hannity, Ann Coulter. I've had a number of Fox people on my show that are Fox News contributors, like Jedediah Bila, S.E. Cupp, I'm trying to think, Margaret Hoover, the great-granddaughter of Herbert Hoover. And when I had them on the show, I would ask them about the birth certificate. Now, I didn't ask S.E. Cupp, but S.E. Cupp was always willing to return an email to me, always willing. You know, when she was promoting her book, she had no problem. I shouldn't say always willing, but she did come on the show and discuss her book when she wrote the book about the attack on religion here in the United States. And when I called her up and asked her to come on the show to discuss the birther issue and why the mainstream media wasn't doing it, S.E. Cupp suddenly decided that she would no longer return my calls or return my emails. Jedediah Bila.
I had no doubt that was going to be your next line.
Yeah.
Absolutely no doubt.
And Jedediah Bila, who's a contributor on the Hannity show, was very, very clear that she thought that the documents were real. And when I had Margaret Hoover on, we actually got into an argument. I cut this out of the show. But we got into an argument, and I still have it on tape, and she told me that she wasn't going to waste another bit of oxygen discussing that issue. And that's how adamant she was that she didn't want to discuss the issue. In fact, the only person that was kind of nice about it was Juan Williams when I had him on the show. He was actually willing to discuss it a little bit. And just to give you another example, Michelle Bachmann came on the show back when she was still running for president. I asked Michelle Bachmann about the birth certificate, and she said, Donald Trump doesn't think it's real. And I said, well, I know that, but I'm asking you what Michelle Bachmann thinks. And she said it was an issue she really hadn't had time to look into. So she kind of walked a fine line there. But the bottom line is that people that in the past we could count on, Michelle Bachmann, Fox News, talk radio, all of those people have abandoned this story. And I can't for the life of me figure out why. I mean, I did have Major General, I believe it's Paul Vallely, on the show, and he said that...
Yep, I read his, I watched his YouTube where he had 10 experts, CIA experts, that had all verified that the birth certificate was fraudulent.
Well, he's a well-connected guy, as you might imagine, and he said that he's got sources on Capitol Hill, and he's got sources at Fox News after being their terrorism expert for many, many years, like 6 or 7 years. And he said one of the things that's also being thrown about, Tom, is that if Obama is pursued, you know, if criminal charges are pursued, that we're going to see race riots in America's 100 largest cities. And they're throwing that idea out there to scare people away from the issue as well. My thought is, when a crime has been committed, you pursue it. And then if subsequent crimes are being committed because they didn't like you pursuing the first crime, you pursue those criminals as well. I mean, you don't let yourself be intimidated. So,
you know,
I've said my piece.
It's hard for us to have this conversation because, as I started to say earlier, and again, I tend to, there's so much to cover, by the way, the book is 155,000+ words, and so when I hear these leftists and conservatives, so-called, saying that there's not one shred of evidence, I don't know whether to be. I'm no longer sick. I just laugh. I'm like, have me on your show, and then we'll see how much evidence there isn't.
Let me say something, Tom. No, that's okay. I want to attack this from two fronts because one issue is the idea of constitutional eligibility, and then the whole other issue are these fake documents which indicate that he wasn't from America to begin with. So let's start with the constitutional issue. Even if he were born in Hawaii, he doesn't meet the definition of natural born, does he?
No, and again, I write about this, and it's interesting because I have posted, you know, ad nauseum about this, as I'm sure you have, you know, every day. It's hilarious to say that I don't even really care about the issue. What I care about is the cover-up. It's, you know, it's like Watergate. They said it wasn't the issue. And think about it. A group of, you know, that happened to be, you know, called the plumbers, but White House people break into the enemy's, you know, the Democratic National Headquarters to get dirt on the opposing candidate. Today we've institutionalized that. It's called OR, or Opposition Research. Everybody does it. That's all it was. It would be handled in small claims court today. It's an absolute joke. But the cover-up, okay, was supposedly the thing that caused the resignation. Well, the cover-up here is just beyond belief. But your question went to the natural-born citizenship eligibility issue. Again, it's one of the things I write about in the book is the legal establishment in the country, and this, I don't even want to get into it. It's so much information, but Jonathan Turley, who writes the number one legal professor blog in the country, according to the American Bar Association, he said they could not wait for the nomination of John McCain. So once and for all, this unsettled constitutional, you know, question or definition could be resolved. Well,
he's a professor of law at George Washington University.
Yep, he is, and he's recently come out against the NDAA, wherein, you know, the president now has the authority to not only incarcerate without any due process, but to apparently assassinate American citizens, and we're still waiting for the answer as to whether or not that can take place on U.S. soil, the assassination. But now all of a sudden Jonathan Turley is getting religion, and he finds that offensive. Well, he had zero problem with Obama's work. But anyway, I would love to debate him. There's a guy named Gabriel Chin that's down the road here in Tucson from the University of Arizona that said that if John McCain were elected, it would be represent the destruction of the very rule of law. Once again, has no words. You can do a Google search. Not one word has he written about the clear ineligibility of Barack Hussein Obama. There's a guy named John Jay, who was the first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, that on July the 25th of 1787, one day after John Rutledge's committee, called the Committee of Detail, took up the pen to write the original draft of the Constitution, John Jay, who was serving as Secretary of Foreign Affairs, the equivalent of Secretary of State today, penned a letter to George Washington in which he asked, would it not be advisable to ensure, he was referring to the Constitution, that this, the office of Commander-in-Chief of the American Army, he called it Command-in-Chief of the American Army, and he was writing to the original Commander-in-Chief, George Washington, who would soon become the first president and first Commander-in-Chief of the actual United States. And he said, would it not be advisable that we not allow this to devolve upon anyone who is not a natural-born citizen in order to avoid, and he's very clear on his reasoning, in order to avoid having a foreigner in that position. It's almost a direct quote. Okay, well, When the original draft, it was written by Edmund Randolph, who was the governor of Virginia at the time, was completed. There were no requirements whatsoever given for the commander-in-chief. However, 6 weeks later, on April the 6th, September the 6th, when the final draft was presented to the Constitutional Convention, having been written by essentially Governor Morris, but he was on the committee of style and arrangement that was under the direction of Madison and Hamilton. that clause had made it into the Constitution, and everyone knew what that meant. And I can tell you how I know that they knew in a minute, but think about this. The three guys who went under the pseudonym of Plupius, who wrote the Federalist Papers, the very vehicle by which the Constitution was ratified by the citizens of the states, and ultimately by the states, all three of them, Jay, Madison, and Hamilton, were the guys responsible for getting that clause into the Constitution. Now, the left hates that clause. They call it the most unconstitutional. That's not the word. Whatever it is, they hate the clause. There were seven or eight attempts between 2004 and 2008 to delete that clause from the Constitution. These were amendments proposed in the United States.
Can I interrupt you for just a second, Tom? That's okay. Do you think that they were, at that point, are already trying to lay the groundwork for Barack Obama?
Listen, Mark, I do not know what on earth could have possessed me to do it, but on August or whatever it was of 2004? Yeah, it had to be 2004 at the Fleet Center in Boston. I was not there. I was watching it on TV. I happened to witness the coronation of one Barack Hussein Obama, who no person in the United States had ever before heard of. And it's as if no liberal had ever seen an articulate, well-dressed black man. And I found
well,
that
we know so, Joe Biden. We know Joe Biden hadn't.
Well, nor had my beloved friend Harry Reid. But I was so incensed by that because I grew up in Houston, and I had plenty of I worked construction. My dad's construction company. Almost everyone I worked with in the field was black. I played basketball at the University of Texas. I'm sure I'm racially stereotyping, but needless to say, there were a few blacks that I played basketball with. Most of the blacks I knew were articulate and well-dressed, okay? That was just part of their culture, at least the ones that went to church. And so when I see this coronation taking place before my eyes, and I'm a pretty observant person, I was stunned, and I asked myself, what's going on? Well, what was going on was George Soros was introducing Barack Obama to the people of America. You're soon to be king. And that, yes, to answer your question, in fact, time, that's when these amendments started being proposed. None of them passed. They were being proposed in the United States Congress, and really for that purpose.
Well, one of the things that I recall from the time is that Barack Obama was a relatively unknown state senator from Illinois. He had really done nothing of major accomplishment while in the Illinois State Senate. I think, as you point out in your book, he had a lot of, or maybe it was Jack Cashel, he had a lot of bills handed to him when he got there by people who were trying to help him build his career, bills that he hadn't even written. He did a lot of stealing of other people's work while he was there, which maybe is why he picked Joe Biden to be his vice president. They have that in common. But this guy had barely been elected to the U.S. Senate. I don't think he'd even sat in his junior Senate seat yet whenever people started asking him if he'd want to run for president. It was amazing.
It's been an orchestrated affair from the get-go. And, again, when I saw that coronation, and that's what it was, I was sitting there. Of course, I can't even, again, imagine what would possess me to watch the Democratic National Convention, but nonetheless, I was. And probably the only reason I did watch, because I was just stunned at what was happening. I was like, this guy has never been, he's barely been a dog catcher, okay? And he's being treated as if he was the Messiah. And that's exactly the effect that they not only wanted to, have or create, but they did, in fact, succeed in that. That's exactly the way he was received when he, was finally elected president.
Well, it's amazing, Tom. It's amazing. If you go on the Internet, you can find hundreds of pictures of him depicted as Jesus. You can find pictures of him depicted as Albert Einstein. It is amazing how this guy is worshipped. I actually have a video coming out very soon where I attack the idea that this guy is some sort of super intellectual. But what I can tell you is there are people who actually believe that. I mean, there are people who think he was sent here to save America, and it's absolutely ridiculous. This guy is nothing more than, you know, retreaded Chicago crooked politics at his best, and yet people think that there's something about him. He's transparent. He's bringing hope and change. I mean, that's all a bunch of BS. He hasn't done anything differently than any other crooked politician.
Other than transform America into a third world country.
Well, there's that.
Here.
Okay, I apologize. I
like to refer to him, and I don't do it often, but he's closer to being the 12th imam than he is to being the Messiah. I can assure you that.
I'm going to get email on that. Now, one thing, getting back to the constitutionality of it all, one of the things we know is that for all their foresight, the founding fathers did not do a good job of defining natural born citizen in the Constitution. And in the absence of a clear constitutional definition, I believe it falls back on common law. And that would have undoubtedly been the definition put forward by Emmerich Vattel in Law of Nations, would it not?
Well, actually, you know, Blackstone was probably the other prominent legal scholar of the day, Blackstone and Vattel, or De Vattel, however you want to, Emmerich Vattel.
That's it, yeah.
But you're exactly right. And Benjamin Franklin, now keep in mind, Benjamin Franklin had not only been, you know, one of the, at least he was on the committee that wrote the Declaration. We all know who wrote it, but he was clearly at the Declaration Convention and he was the most respected, you know, at least most venerable founder and the oldest member of the Constitution. He stated in a letter to the publisher of Law of Nations, which was De Vattel's, classic treatise on legal matters and questions of constitutional law, etc. He stated that book that I'm trying to remember what the editor's name was anyway, that he had gifted Franklin or sent Franklin. Franklin was a very wealthy man for anyone who doesn't know it, but that had been continually in the hands of the members of the delegates to the convention. So it was very clear in that, and I could read to you what the definition is, but De Vattel said that there were two conditions, essentially, that you must be born in country to parents of citizens. And by the way, this was a generic definition. The United States did not exist as of yet, you know, as the United States of America. But it was understood, and I've read, you know, reports and literature where it, in fact, was clearly understood, and it's to this day in many, many, probably most of the other constitutions of other countries, free countries of the world, they had to be born in country of parents who were citizens. And, you know, did they say two parents? No, they did not. But trust me, legal writers are very big on detail, and when they add that S in their parents, that has a meaning. So the bottom line, and he went on to say, he said, however, and again, I don't have the document in front of me, but he said, however, if they happen to be born, he compares the importance of the two, and he said the most important thing is that the father be a citizen. Now, ostensibly father meant, you know, either parent, but in case it didn't, he specifically said the father, and we know Barack Hussein Obama's father, or at least his alleged father, obviously hasn't clearly been established, was clearly a citizen of either Kenya, well, frankly, it was both. He was a dual citizen of Kenya, which was a protectorate of England or Great Britain at the time. Clearly not a United States citizen. Never, ever was a United States citizen, only lived here for a few years, never lived with Barack Obama Jr. or his mother. And so basically it was very clear, and he said if a child were born in country of a father who was not a citizen, it would only be the country of his birth, or the place of his birth, that's a direct quote, and not his country. So it was very clear that the citizenship of the father, or ostensibly the parents, must be the determining factor. And we know that people that are born to diplomats and soldiers, et cetera, overseas, are in fact considered citizens if their parents, both parents, are U.S. citizens. So that was very clear. That was in the hands. That definition was understood, which is why there was no need for them to explain it. Everybody knew at the time. And keep in mind, the guys that sold this Constitution to the American populace and to the states, those three guys, each of them, John Jay, Alexander Hamilton, and James Madison, the father of the Constitution, each of them played a key role in making sure that that clause was in the document. And it's still there today in spite of the best efforts of the Democrats to have it removed.
Now, Tom, let me jump in for just a second. That's okay. No, I'm just giving you a hard time. I tend to let my guests talk, okay, because we've got plenty of time here, and there's no reason to do the type of short soundbiting that you get on some of the big names we mentioned earlier. But what I want to talk about is you brought into question whether or not Barack Obama Sr. is really the parent. Now, after all the trouble Rush got into, I'm going to avoid the S word, but Mama Stanley got around. I mean, there are nude pictures of her that are unquestionably her that surfaced in the porn collection of Frank Marshall Davis. Frank Marshall Davis had written novels, which he said were pretty much autobiographic, where he talked about his preference for young people as far as sexual partners go. There's a rumor that
all of that's been documented.
Yeah. So the bottom line is, Mama Stanley got around a little bit, and that's the. I'd like to say something else, but I'm gonna draw the line right there. And so his true father is being called. We don't know that it's being called into question. I'm gonna ask you a tough question, and I promise you, I'm not an obot, but. As part of a movement that's trying to suggest that Barack Obama doesn't qualify under the Constitution because he has a father that's Kenyan, to also come out and say, hey, his father might just be some guy here in the United States, well, that would act, even if Obama's born in Kenya, that would give him two American-born parents and make him eligible again. So why pursue that line of line of thinking?
Well, I'm glad you asked the question. I'll be honest, I had not heard that.
That's because I just made it up.
Well, that's good. One of the things that, by the way, I'm going to do a little commercial here for Saul Alinsky. Any of your listeners, our fellow Tea Partiers who have not read Saul Alinsky, they need to do so. I resisted forever because I just couldn't stand the thought of, even listening to those or exposing myself to such falsehoods. But and I haven't read all of it, but I've read enough to know that one of the people we are up against are the masters of propaganda. They invented it. And they will do anything, such as, for example, floating a Kenyan birth certificate that's clearly provably false in getting a lot of people to buy into it, in order to then be able to say, see how ridiculous the tinfoil hat crowd on the right is.
Right.
So that's the sort of thing. So they probably originate these kind of things. Right now, for example, they're talking about the Tea Party's war on women. Now, I'm a Tea Party leader, okay, and you are too. Were you aware that we were at war with women?
Well, my thought was is that two of our favorite politicians are Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann. You could probably throw Christine O'Donnell in there as well, and those three were absolutely destroyed by the liberal so-called mainstream media and by members of the left. Everybody's making a big deal out of Rush. I guess they feel that the left has an exclusive on misogynistic comments because those three were destroyed by the left. So I don't know where they get the fact that we're at war with women. I know that they don't like the idea that Tea Partiers don't support abortion, but they need to remember that half of the babies aborted, which is a euphemistic way of saying murdered, are females. So I don't know where that crap comes from, Tom, but the bottom line is if anybody's at war with women, it's the left. Their silence in the Monica Lewinsky case was deafening. Their silence in the murder of Nicole Simpson by O.J. Simpson was deafening. And every time there's an issue out there involving women, their silence whenever Carolyn Prejean, was it Carolyn Prejean? I'm sorry, what was her first name? It was something Prejean, the beauty contestant.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, whenever she was torn apart.
I remember
apart,
she looked black, but I don't remember her name.
Well, at any rate, well, you're a true male, Tom. But the bottom line, and I actually remember too, but the bottom line is that their silence was deafening in that instance as well. The only time these women's groups, like now, give a damn about anything is whenever the woman being attacked is a liberal. They sit by and do nothing whenever a conservative woman is attacked. And if anybody wants to talk about an attack on women, just go back and look at the way that Christine O'Donnell, Michelle Bachmann, Sarah Palin, you could probably add Marsha Blackburn out of Tennessee to that list.
Yeah, I've met Marsha. I used to live in Tennessee for 20 years. I love her. She's phenomenal. But, you're missing the point, Mark, if I may be so bold, because none of them are real women, because obviously real women are only feeling and sensitive and don't actually have a brain, you see. So none of those women would actually count. Same thing with blacks. You know, any black that's a conservative, of course we know, is not a real conservative. So you need to do a little more research, you know. That's all I can say.
Well, actually, any black that's a conservative isn't really black, I think, is what you meant to say.
You're ahead of me on that. You're right. Mark, here's something that I absolutely believe, and this, you know, when I get introduced every now and then as a speaker, they'll say the outspoken Tom Valentine. Well, one thing I refuse to do, and again, it goes back to this, you know, quaint little thing called the First Amendment, is to be silenced and to sit by and watch absurdity masquerade as both intellectual superiority, which it absolutely has no intellectual basis, and moral superiority. And, you know, when we talk about moral superiority, we're talking about, for example, the right of two men to, you know, to marry and to mate. I'm not sure what the product of such mating is. Well, actually, I am sure. But anyway, these are their moral causes, you know, the killing of the innocent in the womb, or in the case of partial birth abortion, as with Barack Obama championed in the Illinois Senate, perhaps one of his proudest accomplishments. These are the moral causes that give them the moral high ground to silence, you know, us inferiors on the right. And in fact, we have the intellectual and moral high ground on every issue. And this is the reason why I'm so adamant that everyone on our side drop the nonsense of this mainstream media. Now, I appreciate it. You've already adopted the so-called, and that's a step. It's like I'm going to introduce the 12-step program for, you know, weaning ourselves of that terminology. But somewhere in the middle of that, you start to say the so-called mainstream media. But again, it's not. If what we called it was the end of it, that would be fine, but it's not, because it informs our worldview, and we actually believe that everybody in the room, with the exception of us, thinks that, you know, providing contraceptives is somehow a duty that our citizens have to do for others, you know, which is an absolute absurdity on every level. But it's put out there as doctrine, as orthodox, you know, truth, and any intelligent person obviously is supposed to recognize that. Well, I refuse to check my brain at the door, and that's exactly what they expect us to do. And unfortunately, most Americans, see, that's the problem with people on our side. We're too nice. And, you know, I'm a Christian, I'm a Latter-day Saint, I get along well with people, and I don't bother arguing with people who have no interest in the truth. But at the same time, I am not willing to sit down and to be silenced when obvious falsehoods are masquerading, you know, just like the emperor. He's standing before us stark naked, and everyone in the room is supposed to say, except one little boy over in the corner who made the obvious statement, was supposed to say, how wonderful his clothes are. And the little boy said, and I'm sure you're familiar with the story, why is he standing there naked, you know? But everybody else was so concerned about what the elites in the obsolete media had to say about them that they didn't dare point out the obvious, which is he's stark naked, he has no clothes, he has no birth certificate, the dog did not eat his homework, people don't spend several million dollars fighting in court the release of a document that would prove that the document he's put online is legitimate. It just does not happen, and everybody knows it, and I, for one, refuse to be silenced about it. Thank you.
Well, that's fine, and what I can tell you is that one of the situations that I've encountered numerous times when I start talking about this is someone, oftentimes someone that actually knows me and likes me, will kind of look at me and get that smirk on their face and say, Mark, have you become one of those birthers? And I'll look them back in the eye and I'll say, not just a birther, a proud birther. And if you took more than 10 minutes to look into it, you'd be a birther too. And you look them back in the eye and you say that with confidence, and then all of a sudden they're kind of like, well, tell me about it. What can you tell me about it? And then you go off into the conversation, and within about 10 minutes they're saying, oh my gosh, I didn't realize it was that fake. Why doesn't somebody do anything about this? What has Fox News said about this? And you have to give them the disappointing news that Fox has turned into a network of cowards. And they're also, I mean, it's not all because they've been threatened. Some of it is because they've got all the conservatives they think they can get, and they want part of that CNN audience. So that's fine. But I think we need to hold our heads up high. You know, Barbara Mandrell has that song, I Was Country When Country Wasn't Cool. I'm looking forward to wearing a shirt one day that says I was a birther when being a birther wasn't cool. I'm perfectly okay with anybody criticizing me. It's kind of funny that Glenn Beck likes to talk about George Washington being his hero. He's written a book about George Washington. It's a damn good thing that George Washington had more courage than Glenn Beck, because I could just see Washington sitting there going, oh, I don't know, should I cross the Delaware? Someone might call me a crosser, or you know, a Delaware crosser. I don't want to be called any mean names. I mean, give me a break. I mean, these guys are all a bunch of cowards. I'm through defending them. I'm through buying their books. As I speak to you right now, I've got a shelf behind me that is loaded down with Ann Coulter, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly, Mark Levin books, and I can tell you that I am through putting my money in their pockets. If they don't have the intestinal fortitude to go forward on an issue this important, I have no use for them. And I tell you something else, they need to be held to the fire. They need to have their feet held to the fire. When this is all over and we've had our day in court and we've won, they need to be held accountable. And this idea of, well, oh my goodness, it turns out it was fake, and then let them jump on the bandwagon late in the game and pretend they were with us all along, that's not going to happen. We've had to have an army of citizen journalists rise up because these clowns won't do their job, and I don't think we should ever, ever let them forget about it any more than we should let people that were involved in Nazi activities that were illegal get away with it just because they're, you know, 99 years old or something. I mean, these are things that will not be forgotten.
Mark, well, listen. You and I are kindred spirits, and I applaud everything you said, and I couldn't have said it better, and I couldn't agree more. Michelle Malkin was on with Sean Hannity, I guess, a couple of days after Joe Arpaio, Sheriff Arpaio's press conference, and she was chiming in how, you know, I said all along, you know, she wrote Culture of Corruption, that we need to bet this guy and we're going to do it. But here's the caveat. Now there's an asterisk. Everybody in the conservative so-called press that now wants to, quote-unquote, vet him, the asterisk says, however, do not mention, you know, that he's either not natural born or that his birth, you know, validation is completely false. Don't mention that, but we're going to vet him. And you know, I just... you can't do it. I have a definition of truth, and it's simply that truth never contradicts itself or any other known truth. Conversely, falsehoods, lies, untruths always by definition contradict other known truths, and interestingly, they also contradict other known falsehoods because they simply are not consistent with, you know, facts and with truth. And so these people that want to, be good on most of the issues. When I wrote this open letter to Glenn Beck, and when I said at all, I listed Michelle Malkin, Ann Coulter, Mark Levin, all of these people, okay? I'm not saying they're horrifically bad people or that they've never done anything good. They have, clearly. And I read all those books, too. But when you will not discern such a simple matter, there's no evidence whatsoever that he's actually legitimate. And again, anybody that wants to know, they can read this book. They should also read Jerry Corsi's book. They may want to read Jack's book. It's fantastic. But it's not even a close call as to whether or not he's eligible in any shape or form. And the other issue, again, that I mentioned earlier is this is not, I've had Republicans almost across the board, Republican activists, and I'm an independent. I'm pretty much done with the Republican Party. But the fact is, they have said to me, this is not an important issue and it's just a distraction. What they really mean is, this is an embarrassment and I'm not willing, I don't have the guts, as you said, to use another terminology. I don't have it. I'm not willing to stand up for the truth because it's not popular. By the way, I'm not going to be voting Democrat anytime soon, but the Tea Party is a sea change in America, and we will no longer vote for candidates who are the epitome of compromise, because at some point, and Barack Obama has been the beginning of this lesson, we have to suffer the consequences of our compromise to where we're now at a point where full-blown socialism is acceptable to a good part of the American people.
Well, listen, we live in a country that has been dumbed down intentionally by liberals in the education system, and I can tell you that there's a very bright young girl that I worked with at one point. She was a couple of years out of college, actually made good grades in college, and I tried to have a political conversation with her one day, and I've told the story on the air before, and she actually looked at me with kind of that deer in the headlights look and said, communism, that's the bad one, right? And this is it's not her fault, you know. This is a person who paid attention. Yeah, this is an educational system that has failed us intentionally. But to it, Tom, we're running out of time. I've got to get the book read. I've read some of it, but you know, I didn't have that much time to get ready for this. And so I'm going to read the book in its entirety. I'm going to have you back on, and then we're going to really dig into the meat and potatoes of it. But for right now, tell my listeners how they can get a hold of a copy of the book.
It's available. It's on Amazon, but it's also available through my website, which is uncommonsensenow.com. In the first book, I wrote that book again. It was released 1 year ago. Well, actually, 14 months ago, in January of 2011. But anyway, that's where the title of the website came from. That book is called Uncommon Sense, apparently. It's a much shorter book. It's, 150 pages. This one's about 600 pages. Uncommon Sense sells for $15. O'Reilly sells for $20. It's, again, four times as long as the $15 book, but I'm thinking about buy it for $60. In any case, it's available at uncommonsensenow.com, uncommonsensenow.com. And I'd love to be back on, Mark. This is it's difficult to even talk about this because it's so obvious and the truth is so self-evident. Joe Arpaio absolutely proved fraud, you know, on just two of multiple documents and multiple other facts and felonies, if you will, treasonous felonies. And again, the bigger crime, in my opinion, is not just the left-wing media, but the so-called conservative media not willing to stand up to the truth. Dietrich Bonhoeffer said, "Silence in the face of evil is itself evil. God will not hold us guiltless. Not to speak is to speak. Act is to act."
An excellent way to close the show. Tom, thank you for being here. We look forward to having you back real soon.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's been pleasure, and God bless the America and our Tea Party movement. This is truly the restoring of the Constitution and our way of life.
I couldn't agree with you more. Thanks, Tom.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillard.